Good evening and welcome to Spirit Radio. I am your host, Willie Hassel. Along with my co-host, Lynn Nickerson, we will take you on a journey into the unknown, where the paranormal becomes the normal, a journey to a world cloaked in darkness, where reality becomes a thin veil. So sit back, relax, and join us as we venture into the shadows, the darkness, the unknown, and back. And good evening once again, and welcome to Spirit Radio, the paranormal experience. I'm Willie Hassel, along with the lovely, the mystical, the mysterious Lynn Nickerson. Good evening.
What you talking about?
What you talking about, Lewis? How are you?
I'm not too bad.
Not too bad?
Yeah, considering it's been a pretty good day.
We had a good day. Yeah, a fun day. And thank you to Norm.
Norm Moody and Norm's Bridget. Community Corner.
Manchester
Public TV.
Having us on his TV show today. And also thank you to Tom and Caitlin for joining us on the show.
As well as Joe Bella came along too.
Joe Bella.
So it was a very dynamic program.
Yep. And I also want to thank, and I want to mention actually, Jason Brown for giving us a great lead in tonight. And also,
who?
In case you don't know,
what?
DJ of the Year.
Oh, congratulations,
congratulations,
Jason. That's terrific.
Jason. We think that's great.
That's well deserved.
Yes, well deserved. 14 years, I believe it, he said it is.
Oh, no kidding.
He's been on doing the kitchen sink.
Oh, that's commendable.
It is.
I had no idea. I didn't realize anybody had been here that long.
I didn't know that either, but I think that's great.
I would,
hey, but you know what?
What?
We're almost up to 5 years.
Well,
next,
I know.
Next month.
We'd be good.
Anniversary. and in case you haven't noticed, we're also stalling because our guest isn't here. But we do know that he's on his way.
Yes, he is. And shall we give them a hint as to who this might be?
Hey, we can do that. But I'll save the actual introduction till when he gets here.
Yes, you should.
But he's going to tell us
Lighthouse Man.
Yep, he's going to tell us about some haunted lighthouses around Portsmouth and New England. And he's always a great guest.
He's got so much information.
Is this his fifth time?
I think it's his fourth or fifth time on the radio, and then he was on the TV show.
Yeah, he was on our TV show, Edge of Reality, one time.
So I think it's about our sixth encounter.
With Mr.
Jeremy D'Entremont.
And they're always fun encounters.
Oh, yeah. Very informative. They're a learning experience.
A learning experience. That's true.
Did you realize that he's got a real list of lectures this year? He does every year, but he's got quite a bit.
I haven't looked at the page, but I know you told me he does.
Yep.
But you know who else has got some lectures this year and some stuff coming up?
Oh, my gosh. I didn't give that a second thought. Shall I help you out with that?
Yeah, why don't you do that?
I would be most happy to.
I mean, we hate to blow our own horns, but we're just sitting here waiting. So,
well, just about a year ago now, I came out with Gateway to the Paranormal, my first book. And in it are various stories on the paranormal, of course, and some include our investigations at the James House Museum and some other locations. So anyway, we've put together a presentation that involves EVPs and different kinds of evidence that we've garnered, and we're going to do a presentation on that. We'll have some actual EVPs to play to the audience, and then we'll have some interesting spooky encounters that we've had with some darker entities, and darker. You know, just kind of some fun Halloween stuff. So we are going to be at the Northampton Public Library on October 18th, at the Paul Memorial Library in Newfields on October 24th, at the Rice Public Library in Kittery, on October 25th, and on October 30th, we'll be at the East Kingston Public Library in East Kingston, New Hampshire.
All right. And hey.
Hey, guess who just dropped in?
Yeah, guess who's here? Tonight on Spirit Radio, The Paranormal Experience, we welcome once again to the show our friend Jeremy D'Entremont. Jeremy has been photographing and researching lighthouses for over 30 years, and he is the author of over 20 books and hundreds of articles on the history of lighthouses and other maritime subjects. And Jeremy is the historian for the American Lighthouse Foundation. He is the founder of the Friends of Portsmouth Harbor Lighthouses and the webmaster of New England Lighthouses, a virtual guide. He is also the owner and tour operator of New England Lighthouse Tours. And you know what? That's not all. He's even more. He is also a paranormal investigator and has had his own experiences with the paranormal in some of the local lighthouses.
This is true.
Along with other local investigators. So I think we can say he's a very busy guy, but he took time out from his schedule to be here with us for, we think this is his fifth appearance.
At least
it sounds about right. It seems like it's going to be at least five.
So, welcome to the show. Jeremy.
Thanks so much.
I apologize for being a few minutes late.
Hey, I'm going to blame it on the darkness and the rain. It's so hard to see out here. And I'll tell you, even though I have been here.
You couldn't find it?
Yeah, I always have trouble finding this at night. I mean, you guys come here all the time.
Well, we're in another dimension, you know.
Okay, let's blame it on that.
That must be what it is.
But we do have a brand new sign out front.
That's true. And I did finally notice that after I went back. Every single time I end up going back and forth a couple of times.
It's like it's so insipid, innocuous. It's just there's nothing remarkable about the entryway. It just looks like somebody's driveway.
But once you get in here, though, it's pretty remarkable,
isn't it? Oh, it's
all kinds of fun. Oh, absolutely. It's a magical land. Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me back again.
Hey, thank you for joining us again, Jeremy.
You're very welcome.
We appreciate it. It's always nice to talk to you and hear some of your ghost stories.
Well, you've got so many lectures. You've got, what, about six different running ones that you do kind of alternate?
Well, there's one I do most of the time. I do one called New England Lighthouses and the People Who Kept Them. And I do a lot of those that are sponsored by New Hampshire Humanities, a nonprofit organization that actually sponsors presentations by a lot of different people at libraries and historical societies around New Hampshire.
And so
I've been doing that for a couple of years I've done presentations for a long time, but I got on the Speakers Bureau is the correct term, but I got in with New Hampshire Humanities a couple of years ago, so I do a lot of my talks that are sponsored by them. So I'm doing one tomorrow night at Center Harbor, New Hampshire.
Whoa.
I did one last night, not through them, but in Saugus, Massachusetts, at the Saugus Library. So I do that one a lot, but I also sometimes do one on, more specifically, on the lighthouses of this area, the New Hampshire seacoast and southern Maine. And occasionally I do them on haunted lighthouses, and it's not one I do that often, but people, of course, often want that in October.
At this time of year.
Yeah. I see you're going to be in, is it Kittery, the week after us?
That is correct,
You'd be cool.
I spoke at the Kittery Community Center a few months ago, and there was such a good turnout. Are you familiar with the Star Theater?
Oh, yes.
Were you there?
No, but 2 years ago, you were one of our speakers.
Right,
at the
Parafest. Of course. Yeah, that's right. The Parafest there.
So but, were you in the Star Theater? Is that where you were? Wow.
Yeah, I will be speaking there. And I spoke at the Star Theater a couple of months ago, did my general Lighthouse, my New Hampshire Seacoast and Maine talk. And it was such a good turnout. I was amazed. It was like an overflow crowd. But I'll be speaking there on Halloween, evening. Yeah, on Halloween itself, October 31st, about
Very
Haunted Lighthouses.
Cool.
Okay.
I'm just trying to bring up my schedule so I can give you the time. Did you make any notes or anything?
Print out your schedule. Now, October 29th, you're going to be in Wilmington, the 30th at
Wilmington,
Rowley,
Mass, yeah,
31st
at the library,
at Kittery.
The 30th at Rowley, Mass, which isn't too far from
right.
New Hampshire.
But I don't have the time schedule.
Yeah, I can bring that up, but...
Because I was thinking you were going to have that. Let me just double check to see if I know, Jeremy. I didn't print out the times.
Mm-hmm.
I have the 1, 2, 3, the 5 different types of lectures that you do have.
Yeah. I occasionally do other lectures too, but those ones I just mentioned are the ones I do most of the time. Yeah.
And it starts about 7?
They're usually about 7. But
but anybody can go on the Kittery Town or...
I think it's on there. Well, it's on the Kittery Library website, I believe,
okay.
But it's also on my website. My website is newenglandlighthouses.net. New England Lighthouses is a virtual guide, but the address is newenglandlighthouses.net, not .com, but .net.
Yep.
And I have a page on there with my lecture schedule. It says Lectures by Jeremy Dontremont, and the complete schedule is on there and times and everything.
So it's going to be on Haunted Lighthouses.
Yeah.
So we were hoping we could, touch on a few of those tonight,
well,
but you don't want to give everything away.
Can't give away the store, but
no.
I just brought up my schedule in front of me here so I can give you the time. I've got a lot of lectures coming up the next few, besides the haunted ones. I've got my general lecture coming up at a lot of different places in the next few weeks.
Yeah, you can go ahead and give the whole schedule if you want.
Well,
that's fine.
Might take up the hour, but I mentioned tomorrow evening I'm speaking at Center Harbor. That's Thursday, the 27th at 7 o'clock at the library in Center Harbor. Next week I'm in Littleton, Mass, Thursday at 7 o'clock at the library in Littleton, Mass. Let's skip that. That's a cruise up in Bar Harbor. I'm narrating an all-day cruise, October 13th, the Penobscot River cruise in Bar Harbor.
I saw that. I'd love to do that.
Yeah, it's a beautiful cruise. We did it last year. A lot of the fall foliage will be coming out.
How far in advance do you book that?
How far in advance?
That particular, because you did it last year.
Yeah.
Up the Penobscot.
But I'm not sure.
Do you book it a year in advance? Because I'd like to leave that date open for next year.
Well,
it's
through Bar Harbor Whale Watch. So they start selling tickets several months ahead of time.
Yeah, but so, I just want us to leave the date open.
Yeah.
So that we can go. What is it, a Saturday?
13th? Yeah, it's always a Saturday. It's always a Saturday near mid October.
Okay.
And there's a guy named Bob Duchesne who's a Maine state representative and has a radio show and is a wildlife expert. So he'll be talking about the wildlife, and I'll be talking about the lighthouses. And it's always a great cruise.
Sounds really educational.
Yeah.
And fun.
Fun is the most important thing.
Yes.
You can throw. You can fool people into maybe learning a little bit if you give them a fun time. Friday, October 26th, I'm speaking at I think this is open to the general public, the New Hampshire Veterans Home in Tilton, New Hampshire.
Oh.
Yeah. As I mentioned, Monday, October 29th at the Wilmington Library in Wilmington, Mass. On Haunted Lighthouses, 7 o'clock at the Wilmington Library. Tuesday, October 30th at the Rowley Library, 7 o'clock. Wednesday, October 31st at 6 p.m. at they call it the Star Theater at the Kittery Community Center, which is, I don't have the address in front of me, but it's Rogers Road.
It is Rogers Road.
It's the old
120,
high
I believe. I think it's 120
that
Rogers
right.
Road.
Yeah.
It sounds right.
Real easy to find.
Yeah. Big playing field in front of the building.
Uh-huh. Yeah. November 3rd, Saturday, November 3rd at 2 in the afternoon, I'm speaking about New England Lighthouses, my more general talk at the Rogers Memorial Library in Hudson, New Hampshire. Monday, November 5th. 6:30 p.m. at Kittery Adult Ed. It's officially a course you can do through Kittery Adult Ed, so it's for 2 hours. So if you go to the Kittery Adult Ed website, you can find out about that. Wells, Maine, the South Coast Senior College. It's another course type thing, 2 to 4 p.m. on Tuesday, November 13th. I'm not sure how senior you have to be to take that.
Well, we're nowhere near it, so just
that's right.
They probably wouldn't let us in.
Yeah, you're just kids, so they wouldn't let you do it. Thursday, November 15th, 7 p.m. at the Madbury Town Hall. I'm speaking about New England lighthouses. And Monday, November 19th, 7 p.m. at the Campton Historical Society, Campton, New Hampshire. Campton? Do you know Campton?
No.
Yeah, that's way up on 93 there.
I know it's pretty far away. Yeah. November 27th, 7 p.m. at the Newburyport, Mass. Library, which, of course, is not too far from here. Rye Congregational Church on Thursday, January 10th. That's the Over 55 Club in Rye. Thursday, January 23rd at the Rye Library. I was just there the other day. We were doing like a test run with the equipment and stuff. That's right down the street. I live right near there. Yeah. So it's really neat to just be able to drive 5 minutes down the road to do a presentation. So Rye Library on January 23rd. That's a Thursday, 6:30 p.m. I know if people are listening and trying to remember all this, it is, again, on my website, newenglandlighthouses.net. Yeah. There's a few more. I won't
but
read.
But you can make mental notes as you're going along. So
yeah.
See, I told you he was a busy guy.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. He is. Well, let me see. Let's start a little bit further up the coast because, like I said, we don't want to give away everything. But one thing that I don't recall talking about is Goat Island Light in Kennebunkport.
Uh-huh. I was just there today. I gave one of my van tours today, and that's included. By the way, you mentioned my tours, New England Lighthouse tours, and this is a little bit of a scoop because I haven't officially announced it online or anything yet. But
is this an exclusive?
You heard it here first.
Well, this is my this is my final year for my van tours. I've been doing that for 11 years.
Oh.
This is my choice. This is a good thing. I'll be doing some other things.
Like going to Scotland and filming again?
Well, I did that last year. I went to England and Scotland. And that was with the U.S. Lighthouse Society. So you mentioned the American Lighthouse Foundation. That's a nonprofit organization that takes care of many lighthouses. That's based in Maine, and I'm very involved with that. I'm the president and historian. But the U.S. Lighthouse Society is another nonprofit that's based in Washington State on the West Coast, and I'm involved with them as well, and I'm actually going to be working part-time from home for them. So I'm doing a lot of different things for them. So that's writing for their magazine and a lot of other things as well.
That's super.
So that's sort of I won't have time for the van tours. Let's just put it that way. So
the writing takes a lot of time.
Yeah, but I'll be doing a lot of other things for them as well, including some tour guiding. So I may be who knows where I'll be going. I went to England and Scotland with them last year, so
that's
we'll see
really
what happens.
Exciting.
It is exciting. It is very exciting.
Well, things are just rolling along.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot going on. But Goat Island Lighthouse is a cute little lighthouse. It's not real tall. It's a short brick lighthouse at the entrance to Cape Porpoise Harbor, or as the Mainers call it, Cape Porpoise Harbor.
Cape Porpoise?
I don't know if some of our listeners have probably been there. It's if you drive to the end of the road, the Pier Road in Cape Porpoise, which is part of Kennebunkport, by the Cape Pier Chowder House, nice place to go for lunch. And you get a view of the pretty little harbor there with a bunch of lobster boats, and the lighthouse is right at the entrance to the harbor, so it's about a half mile off there when you park there.
Is that near Cape Elizabeth then?
No. Well, Kennebunkport is about a half hour south. It's about halfway between here and Cape Elizabeth. Cape Elizabeth is near Portland.
Okay. Yep, I know exactly where it is. It's just after. It's around Kennebunkport then.
Yeah.
It's
Cape Porpoise is a section of the town of Kennebunkport. Cape Porpoise has tremendous history, but it was its own town at one time, but now it's part of Kennebunkport. I could go into the history of Cape Porpoise, but we better not get too deeply into that. But anyway, so there's been a lighthouse there since 1821, for almost 200 years. And let's lead into the interesting paranormal story there. I know the caretaker very well, who has been involved there for over 25 years, a man named Scott Dombrowski. He's a volunteer for the Kennebunkport Conservation Trust, which owns that lighthouse. They own a lot of the islands in that area. They protect a lot of the land and the islands from development there.
Good, thank God.
Yes, absolutely. I agree. Let me just back up a little bit from there, too, and mention that from Goat Island, you can see Walker's Point, the Bush estate in Kennebunkport.
Yeah.
And for the last 2 years of George H.W. Bush's presidency, Secret Service was living at Goat Island Lighthouse, keeping an eye on the harbor there.
Oh, really?
So that was a lookout for the Secret Service there. But that's just a little footnote there. But anyway, so after they left, the Coast Guard had automated the light, and they had moved off the island. The Secret Service came and went, and then the Kennebunkport Conservation Trust got involved, and they got ownership of the lighthouse in the late 90s. So this guy, Scott Dombrowski, was the chief caretaker. He's from Marblehead, Massachusetts. He and his family had moved up to that area. And he became the summer caretaker. He and his family were living out on the island in the summer. A friend of his, a childhood friend of his named Dick Curtis, became the winter caretaker.
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
Does this sound familiar?
Yeah.
Dick was a single guy, so he was living out on the island in the winter. And, I got to know Scott pretty well. I've known him since the late 90s. I only met Dick once. But anyway, Dick was a single guy. He was a lobsterman living on the island with a couple of dogs. And
how far out is it?
It's not that far out. It's about a half mile out from the mainland there at Cape Porpoise.
Probably wouldn't want to swim it, though.
No.
Especially
well, at low tide, the tide goes so low that it's at low tide, it's just mud between land and the island. So it is possible, if you don't mind walking in deep muck, it's possible to walk out to the island at low tide. But I wouldn't want to do it. But
I'd go with snowshoes.
I know Scott, the caretaker, has done it. But anyway, so Dick was the winter caretaker, and Scott was the summer caretaker. Dick, on Memorial Day weekend of 2001, Dick Curtis, this is leading to a good story,
mm-hmm,
believe me.
Mm-hmm.
So Dick, it's a sad story, but it's an interesting story.
Mm-hmm.
Part of it is very sad. Dick came to shore on Memorial Day weekend. I believe it was on Memorial, I'm not sure it was on Memorial Day, but it was Memorial Day weekend of 2001. Dick told some people at the harbor area there, the harbor master's office on shore there. He told people that he was going to go for a boat ride out around the island, like towards sunset. And I believe he had three dogs with him. I think he had two of his own dogs and maybe somebody else's dog. In any case, he had three dogs with him. He went out for the boat ride, and people realized by the next day that he had never come back. Now, when you're looking out at the island there, the other side, when you're on the land there, looking out at the island, the other side of the island is the open ocean.
Mm-hmm.
So he was going out around the island. It's often very rough on the open ocean side of the island. So when he didn't return by the next day, people got very worried about him. So they sent a search party out to look for him. And people looked around for quite a while. It was all over the news that they were searching for him. And they finally found his boat overturned on the ocean side of the island. And after looking for some more time, they eventually found his body. So this was huge news at the time. Again, he was very well known. He was a very popular guy. He was a big guy. He was like 6'5".
What about the dogs? Do they ever find
one of the dogs made it back, is my understanding. Two of them didn't.
Yes.
Nobody knows for sure what happened. They think maybe his dogs got in trouble in the water, or were struggling or something, and he was trying to help the dogs, and the boat overturned, and he didn't make it. I don't know. Nobody knows for sure exactly what happened, but he didn't make it. It was big news. They had a big memorial service for him. Not long after that, I was out on the island. I've been on Goat Island a number of times visiting there with Scott. I was with Scott at the top of the lighthouse not long after his friend Dick had died. And Scott said to me, Dick and I used to joke that after we die, we'll haunt this place. And I will tell you that to this day, Scott feels beyond any shadow of a doubt that his friend Dick's presence is there. And he knows it. I mean, to him, there's no question about it. He knows it beyond any shadow of a doubt. And I can tell you a couple of interesting stories that kind of point to that.
Oh, good.
One is that in 2007, during the period that George W. Bush was president. Mm-hmm. And this is, I know this sounds like I'm going off on a tangent here, but George W. Bush was president, and he was visiting at his parents' home at Walker's Point, which, again, you can see from Goat Island. And Vladimir Putin from Russia was going to meet with George W. Bush at Walker's Point. This was huge news, national news at the time. So they were having this meeting there, and Scott heard that Putin and Bush were going to go out for a boat ride near Goat Island this one afternoon. So Scott, as a way of greeting them, flew the Russian flag on the island near the American flag. This bad flag etiquette. You're really not supposed to fly a foreign flag next to the American flag. But he was saying we should work together, and he wanted to greet them that way. So he flew the Russian flag out there. The boat came out that afternoon with both Presidents Bush, father and son, George H.W. Bush and George W. Bush on the boat, and Vladimir Putin and some Secret Service, a bunch of guys on this boat. And they saw the Russian flag, and they were waving and, I think, taking pictures and tooting the horn and stuff. Scott's out there by himself at the top of the lighthouse on a bright, sunny day. He's standing next to the electronic foghorn on the lighthouse, which had a sensor at that time. The sensor was supposed to sense when it was foggy and turn the horn on. The horn was only supposed to go when it was foggy. Scott's standing there next to that. And when they're all waving from the boat and everything, when they saw the Russian flag, Scott said out loud, nobody else there, he said, "How do you like that, Dick?" Meaning his friend who had died. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. He said the second he said that, the foghorn started blowing, sounding.
Oh, my gosh.
It's like, "How do you like that, Dick?" Womp, womp. And he said it wouldn't stop. He called the Coast Guard, and he told them, "The horn's blowing, it won't stop, and it's a sunny day." They came out to try to shut it off. They could not shut it off. And he said from that moment, starting that moment, he said, "How do you like that, Dick?" That horn never worked right after that. And it never worked right until they replaced all the equipment.
My gosh.
And to him, it was Dick saying, "I love it." It was like, "How do you like that, Dick?" Yeah. And it was him answering, "I love this." And he said it was the type of thing that Dick would love. So to him, it was a clear indication that Dick loved that. But now, he had a lot of other experiences as well.
Did Scott ever get in trouble about flying the Russian flag?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, that's good. Because that would be really, I think, a serious faux pas.
Yeah, you know? Some people might have. I'm sure, I don't know. As far as I know, nobody ever really, got him, gave him a hard time over that.
That's good.
But another time Scott was out there on a cold winter night, I believe by himself, and the furnace had broken down, so there was no heat. In the keeper's house there on Goat Island. So he's like freezing there in a winter coat. And I guess he couldn't get the furnace to come on. So he finally said, "I need some heat, Dick." And the second he said that, the furnace came on.
No kidding.
Yeah. But those are just two of the many experiences he's had out there.
Wow. Now, is there a fireplace at least for backup source of heat?
No, I don't believe there's a fireplace in that
really?
House.
Yeah. Because that would really ward off the
chill. I believe
they,
in the days when the families lived there, the lighthouse families, I believe they would have had a coal stove for heat. Yeah.
The lighthouse there, is it just a tower with a building, or do you live in the tower itself?
No, it's typically if they had enough land, they would have a separate keeper's house. So it's a little brick lighthouse attached by a covered walkway to a keeper's house, to a pretty comfortable keeper's house.
Like a
two-floor house. It's a little brick lighthouse attached to a wooden
nice.
Keeper's house. The walkway between the house and tower, by the way, was washed away in the blizzard of 1978, the original walkway. There was a Coast Guard family living there at that time. The Coast Guard keeper, walked from the lighthouse into the house. Seconds after he walked into the house, a giant wave washed out the walkway, washed it right into the ocean.
Wow.
He missed being washed into the ocean by seconds. I think that's thunder we're hearing.
Was lucky.
Yeah,
there was lightning
as
I came in.
Yeah. Was there really?
It was starting to rain hard, and the lightning was happening.
I can see it's raining
so
out now.
It was a dark and stormy night.
Dark and stormy night. Three sailors sat around the campfire. But anyways,
10:30 at the bottom of the hour.
Yeah, it's the bottom of the hour. So, Why don't we go ahead and take a little break? And we are talking to Jeremy D'Entremont about haunted lighthouses. And if anybody wants to give a call and ask Jeremy a question, or say hi to Jeremy, 603-430-9722, or maybe you have an experience of your own. And if you don't want to actually call, you can also text to that same number, 603-430-9722. Supernatural Magazine, one of the UK's top paranormal magazines, provides support to Spirit Radio, the paranormal experience. It is the magazine's goal to bring every aspect of supernatural news and research from around the world under one roof to create a universal platform for all those interested in the supernatural. More information is available at supernaturalmagazine.com. And you are listening to Spirit Radio, the paranormal experience on the Paranormal UK Radio Network. Welcome back to Spirit Radio, the paranormal experience. We're talking tonight to Jeremy D'Entremont about haunted lighthouses. And he's always got great stories for us. And if anybody wants to ask him a question or tell us a story, 603-430-9722. Welcome back, Jeremy.
Welcome back, Jeremy.
Thank you.
So we were talking about the Goat Island Lighthouse. Are there any tours? Can the public visit out there or not?
No, not really. No, it's again, it's only boat access, and they just use a small boat to go back and forth. If you contact the Kennebunkport Conservation Trust, I don't want to promise anything, but you may be able to set up a private visit.
Oh,
but you have to do it through the organization. There's no regular tours or anything like that.
And there actually is no one living on the island now.
Not on a full time basis. Okay. They're out there in the summer. There's people out there a lot, but nobody's living there on a full time basis.
Okay.
It's a beautiful place. I've been out there
a
number of times.
Is.
Yeah.
Which next one can we move to? How about, I find that Boone Light is pretty dramatic.
Boone Island Lighthouse is an absolutely fascinating place.
Yeah.
I'm sure a lot of our listeners know some of the stories about Boone Island because it's really quite famous.
Yeah.
Partly for stuff that happened before there was a lighthouse there, the famous shipwreck there. Not a happy story.
No, isn't that the cannibalism one? Was it a Spanish?
There's a little bit of cannibalism involved. It was an English ship.
An English ship, okay.
Yeah. I guess we can talk a little bit about that. That's a good place to start when you're talking about Boone Island. It happened in December 1710, and it was an English ship called the Nottingham Galley. The captain was John Dean. And they were carrying a cargo of rope and cheese. Some of the cargo was coming from Ireland that they picked up. And it was 14 men in all. And they came across. They were heading for Boston. They reached the New England coast, you know, to the north, the southern main coast, and they were working their way south. And ran into like a sleet storm off of southern Maine in the wee hours of the morning and ended up going aground at Boone Island. Boone Island is about 6 miles from the nearest point of land, which would be Cape Neddick, the Cape Neddick part of York.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure a lot of our listeners have been to the Nubble Lighthouse, to what they call Sawyer Park there in York, where you go to look at the Nubble Lighthouse. And if you look out to the right of the Nubble out in the distance, you can see Boone Island Lighthouse sticking up out
just
there.
A little bit south of it.
It is, yeah. And or if you go along Long Sands Beach in York and look out in the distance, you can see Boone Island Lighthouse. But anyway, they went aground on the island there. This is long before there was a light, about 100 years before there was a lighthouse there. And the ship was totally lost in the shipwreck. The ship, you know, kind of disintegrated, just went underwater. But all the men, the 14 men on the ship all survived. So they all kind of clambered onto the rocks and survived. But it was December. It was brutal weather. They almost none of the cargo was salvaged, and just a little bit of the wood from the ship, hardly anything, a little bit of canvas from their sails, but very little, you know, they salvaged very little. So they're stuck there. They could see the mainland from the island, but they had no way of getting there.
And no way of yelling either,
and no,
really.
No food to yeah. speak of, just they salvaged a few little bits of the cheese from the ship, but hardly anything. And to make a long story short, they ended up being stuck there for just about a month through this brutal weather. Two of the men were able to take what little bits of sail they had and, you know, I don't know if they used some seaweed and twigs and things that they found. They cobbled together a little makeshift raft and tried to get to shore in the raft to get help, you know, to save the rest. But they didn't make it. Those two died. Oh. They were found on shore. But it was actually finding the bodies of those two men that led people on shore to think that maybe there's other people out there, and they led to them finding the survivors on Boone Island. Meanwhile, two other men died on the island of starvation. The other survivors made use of, when the second man died on the island, the other survivors made use of him, let's say.
Yeah.
you know what I'm saying?
Mm. Well, that's so tragic. In the middle of December.
Yeah.
Must have been frigid.
Yeah, and they had no cover. There's just rocks. It's just barren rocks.
You said they had some of the sail. They didn't build
very,
any
very
tent.
Little. They huddled together. I think they had enough sail, so some of them were able to, if I remember correctly, able to roll up in the sail a little bit, but it was very, very little. They had virtually no cover.
Frostbite, starving, thirsty.
Yeah. When they were finally found by people from Portsmouth who went out and found them on the island, they said they were like wild men, you know, even though it only about a month had passed, but they were absolutely they were, you know, turned almost into skeletons and were just wild-eyed and everything, and they were taken to Portsmouth to recover.
I thought some Native Americans found them. Why did I think that?
You may be talking about an earlier shipwreck. I think it was in 1682. There was an earlier wreck where some Indians or Native Americans went out in canoes and rescued the survivors. But that's a lesser known wreck.
Oh.
The Nottingham Galley is the really famous one. But you're right, there you may have seen reference to the earlier one. By the way, the island was called Boone Island because it became a tradition to put food and supplies out there so that if people were shipwrecked there, they would find the supplies out there. So that was considered a boon granted by God.
Yeah.
Know, that's why it was called Boone Island.
Well, how high above sea level?
About 3 feet. It's just
awful.
A little jumbled pile of rocks. It's a tiny little island. It's got
just
long
ledges
sticking out from it, which is why eventually a lighthouse was put there to warn mariners to keep their distance from it as they went by there. But it's a very low island. But
strong waves would wash away those supplies.
Quite possibly, yeah. The whole history of the island is it's often underwater in storms. During the time that keepers and families lived out there, it was very common for them to have to go up in the lighthouse because the island would be underwater.
Frightening experience.
So eventually, they put a marker on the island, an unlighted marker to kind of mark it during the day, but then they first put a lighthouse there in 1811. It was rebuilt a couple of times. So that tall lighthouse that's there now was built in 1855. It's a tall granite tower, 133 feet tall, tallest lighthouse in New England. But all the other buildings are gone because they've basically been destroyed in storms. There was a keeper's house that was still there in the blizzard of 1978, same storm that washed away a walkway at Goat Island I mentioned. Two Coast Guard keepers were at Boone Island during the blizzard of 78. They had to go up in the lighthouse because the island was underwater during the storm. On the second day of the storm, Coast Guard helicopter rescued them off the island. They had to run out as they waited for the waves to recede, ran out, and the helicopter rescued them. I believe they caught a ladder, you know, and climbed up into the helicopter.
That's
a daring rescue, yeah. So, and then the Coast Guard burned down what was left of the keeper's house because it was so badly damaged. Instead of restoring it, they just burned it down.
That keeper's house, did they put it on like stilts? Did they build it up? No.
No. It was a stone house, and then later a second wooden story was added to it. But some of the stone wall is still standing. So if you go near Boone Island, you can see part of the old stone wall of the keeper's house still standing out
and
there.
And all you can really do is, like, go in a boat around it, right? You can't land on
It's really hard to land on that island. I've actually never been on the island. I've flown over it in a helicopter, and I've been all around it in boats, but I've never actually been on the island. A friend of mine who's works with the Coast Guard, he's a lighthouse technician, he's been on the island. It's now privately owned.
That's right.
Yeah.
It went up for bid, right?
It was auctioned by the government a few years ago, and it's owned by Bobby Sager, who's the chairman of Polaroid. Mm-hmm. He owns three lighthouses now. And
what's he going to do with them?
He told me he's going to rebuild the keeper's house at Boone Island. And
really?
And
why?
I'm going to sound sarcastic when I say this, but all I can say is good luck.
Yeah, good luck.
And I guess I'm being a little bit sarcastic, but, you know, it's got such a history of storms destroying things out there that I don't know. No matter how much money he puts into it and what he builds it out of,
he's going to have to keep replacing it.
I'm afraid so. I'm afraid there's eventually going to be a big storm that's going to wash almost anything away out there. So,
well, what is the purpose for historical significance to recreate history?
I guess
tax dodge.
He didn't really tell me his purpose. He just said he wants to rebuild the house. So I wish him luck. I really do. I hope he's able to pull it off.
Well, I think it's nice, but both you and I...
I'm not sure it's realistic.
Not realistic. I don't think it'll last
for
long.
But maybe he'll prove me wrong. I hope so, but we'll see what happens.
Well, with the crazy weather we have.
But there are a lot of ghost stories of Boone Island. And sometimes they're associated with the shipwreck. But there's also a famous legend there that you'll read in a lot of the books about haunted lighthouses and stuff. The usual legend that's told is that there was a young keeper out there sometime in the 1800s. Sometimes the name is given, but I think it's a made-up name. I'm trying to remember. I have trouble remembering the name that's given because I really believe it's just totally made up. But they say that this young keeper lived there with his wife and that the young keeper died on the island and that his wife for a while tended the light after her husband died. His body was still there and that she eventually went mad and that she was found like wandering the island mad. And that then she died, and that her ghost haunts the island. This sad-faced young woman is seen haunting the island. But I don't believe that any of that is true. I think it's a legend that is just, to me, it falls in the category of legend rather than true history. But actually, I think a lot of these stories, what happens is people experience strange things, and sometimes I think they actually make up the legends to try to explain the strange. They make up a backstory to the strange things that they experience.
Well, it probably starts out as a supposition and then turns into a legend.
Uh-huh. So, but I don't think there's no record of a keeper dying out there like that, so I really don't think that happened.
Mm. How about authentic ghost stories, though?
Well, I'm glad you asked, because I've spoken to a lot of Coast Guard keepers at Boone Island. There's still a lot of them alive who ex-Coast Guard keepers at Boone Island who are still around, and a number of them have told me they felt the place was haunted. Hmm. I spoke with one who was there in the early 1970s. I spoke to him a few years ago. I interviewed him on the phone, and his name is Bob Roberts. He went out there in, I believe, 1970, and he said when he first arrived, the other Coast Guard guy who was there with him asked him if he believed in ghosts, and he said he laughed. He thought that was funny. That was a big joke. And the other guy said, "You're not going to be laughing for long after you're out here for a while." And Bob Roberts told me that he did come to believe the place was haunted. He said when he would go out at night near the fog signal building, he said that he always felt very strongly that somebody was watching him. And he said the other guys told him, well, that's where the cannibalism took place. I think they were just trying to scare him. But anyway, he said that one afternoon, he and another keeper there went out fishing in the small boat they had there. They went pretty far from the island. They went farther than they should have gone because they realized it was getting late and they had to hurry back to get the light lit for sunset, which is like the most important thing that they had to do. So they're hurrying back to the island. And it's near sunset, and as they're hurrying back, the light came on. And they landed, and they went over to the lighthouse, and nobody was there. And there was no sign of anybody there. They never figured out, they never found out who lit the light.
And it wasn't automated at that time.
Correct. It had to be turned on. So they never figured out who lit the light that night. It apparently lit itself. Another Coast Guard keeper told me they had a dog while he was there, and he said the dog always looking like it saw something that nobody else could see, and it was running around like it was chasing something on the island, and they couldn't figure it out.
Oh, yeah. So the island and the tower are haunted?
Well, possibly.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I didn't know if you were just talking about the lighthouse, but I could see where the island itself would be haunted, too, with what happened.
There's so much that's happened there over the years. There's certainly been other shipwrecks around there, too.
Well, I was hoping maybe we could squeeze in one more.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how about the Isles of Shoals?
Sure. And
there was one that I find kind of interesting, and maybe you can elaborate on this, that there was one character that was seen out on Appledore, Smutty Nose, something like that, in a butcher's apron carrying a knife.
Uh-huh. That would be supposedly Philip Babb.
The pirate.
Well, possibly. here's the scoop on Philip Babb. Celia Thaxter, the mm-hmm. famous writer of the Isles of Shoals, she was the daughter of a lighthouse keeper. Mm-hmm. Her father was Thomas Layton, keeper at White Island Lighthouse in the Isles of Shoals. And, of course, the family bought the Appledore House Hotel on Appledore Island, and Celia became like the hostess at the hotel on Appledore. She, in her book, Among the Isles of Shoals, wrote about a character named Philip Babb, who was a real person who lived in the late 1600s on Appledore. And in real life, apparently, he was a fisherman, he was a constable of the islands. But in Celia's book, he was described as a pirate who had possibly sailed with Captain Kidd. And she said that he appeared as a ghost in the Appledore Hotel. And that people would see him, as you said, he would appear in a bloody butcher's apron with a butcher's knife and scared the living
daylights,
whatever's out of people. The story goes that there was a bowling alley in the Appledore House, and supposedly he would appear, I think, in the floor below the bowling alley. And then when the bowling alley was taken out, he stopped appearing, if I remember correctly. So maybe he was really disturbed by that bowling alley. But but again, there's no evidence that he was really a pirate. There was really a Philip Babb, but in actuality, there's no evidence that he was ever a pirate, ever had anything to do with Captain Kidd. Oh. There's also no evidence that Captain Kidd was ever anywhere near the New Hampshire seacoast or anything like that. So I think that part of it is false. There's the famous legends about Oceanborn Mary, who was a real person, and she was associated with a pirate. I don't know if we have time to go deeply into that, but there was a children's book written about Oceanborn Mary and
We got about 10 minutes.
Okay, well, I don't know if we want to use the whole 10 minutes on that, there was a children's book about Oceanborn Mary where the pirate in the book is named Philip Babb.
But
the author said that she only used that name because she liked the name.
Oh.
But it led to a lot of people thinking that Philip Babb was a real pirate in the Isles of Shoals.
Yeah.
That and what Celia Thaxter wrote.
Yeah.
But I really don't think that Philip Babb was really a pirate.
Okay.
So I hate to burst the bubble.
You did. You just burst it.
I think Celia got that from the idea of that bloody ghost in the hotel from somewhere. So maybe there really was a ghost in a butcher's apron, but I don't think he was Philip Babb. Maybe he was actually somebody else.
Well, what has happened to the treasure that is supposed to be just off of White Island? There have been treasure hunters out there.
Well, usually when people talk about a treasure in the Isles of Shoals, they say it's Blackbeard's treasure, Blackbeard the pirate. There's Lunging Island, which is a privately owned small island in the Isles of Shoals. And some years ago, the History Channel actually spent time out there, and people dug and used all kinds of equipment to try to find the treasure.
They
didn't
ground penetrating
radar? Didn't find
radar?
Anything.
Did they do that?
They did, I believe, and it was pretty inconclusive, and they didn't find anything. I know Dennis Robinson, the local historian, doesn't believe there's any treasure there. The family that owns Lunging Island still believes there's treasure there, but...
Well, maybe somebody knows something that the public doesn't.
Well, I don't know.
And they don't want to divulge it.
There's no evidence, absolutely no hard evidence that Blackbeard the pirate ever was in the Isles of Shoals, but we don't know for sure.
Yeah.
The common story that's told about Blackbeard is that he had a young bride, like a teenage bride, who was, I forget whether it was something like his ninth wife or something like that. Not to be confused with Bluebeard, the other character. That's a totally different story. But Blackbeard the pirate supposedly had a bunch of wives, and he had this young girl bride, supposedly a teenage bride, who he was in the Isles of Shoals, decided to bury his treasure on one of the islands, and left his treasure and his young bride on one of the islands.
Guard it.
And told her that he would return. He said, I shall return, or I will come back, or you hear different wording. But sometimes it's said to be White Island, where the lighthouse is now, White Island Lighthouse at the southernmost of the Isles of Shoals. Sometimes it's said to be Smutty Nose Island or Appledore Island or Star Island. You hear, you know, different versions of it. But in any case, they say he was then killed off North Carolina, so he didn't return. And they say that she died on the island and that her ghost wanders. And she's the ghostly woman in white who's often seen on the various islands in the Isles of Shoals.
So do you think she is seen on different islands or?
Well, supposedly a ghostly woman in white has been seen on several of the islands in the Isles of Shoals. It's almost like your cliche ghost, the woman in white with the flowing nightgown kind of clothing. And I'm sure you guys have heard a lot of women in white over the years. But... I have spoken with Coast Guard keepers at White Island who, at least one case of somebody who swore that he saw her on the island, and another case of somebody who said he repeatedly heard a woman's voice on the island when there was no woman there. Every time a storm, this was in the 1980s, he was there, said that every time a storm was coming into the area, he would hear this woman. There's a walkway between the lighthouse and Keeper's house, and he said he would be in the walkway, and he would hear this woman's voice almost like she was shouting to him and giving him a warning, and he had trouble making out what she was saying, but she was like warning him, like there's a storm coming, and he felt that it was very urgent and like she was warning him. And he said there was absolutely not a woman on the island, and he was definitely not hearing the wind or anything like that. It was definitely a woman's voice, and he heard that several times.
And it would be timed with an oncoming storm.
But the other case was the blizzard of 78 was coming in, again, one of the worst storms in New England history. There were two young Coast Guard keepers at White Island, and one of them was trying to secure things around the boathouse. And he was very apprehensive. He was very young. He was like in his early 20s, I believe. And as he was trying to secure things, he saw the apparition of a woman in white appear in front of him. Ooh. And he said he told this to a friend of his who told me, and this guy swore that this was absolutely for real, not a joke, not made up. He said his friend saw this woman appear to him, and she basically spoke to him and said something like, you know, don't worry, everything will be fine, was trying to reassure him. And I don't know how reassured I'd be by a spirit appearing to me and speaking like that. But anyway, there was damage there, but everybody was fine. They did survive it. There was quite a bit of damage, but...
No loss of life there.
No loss of life. So that's, you know, that's a pretty vivid sighting that I was told about there.
Yeah, it sounds like a reliable source. We've got a couple more minutes here. How about, you had mentioned the Ghost Hunters episode when they were out at Portsmouth Harbor.
Yeah. I don't know how much we can talk about in 2 minutes, but yeah, that was 10 years ago. This is about exactly 10 years ago. They spent, Ghost Hunters spent 2 nights at Portsmouth Harbor Lighthouse. And they had a lot of stuff happen in that show. They had the two women on the show, Chris and Amy, were sitting at the top of the stairs and had footsteps coming up the stairs. The show used to be on YouTube, but I think it's been pulled off, so I don't think you can see it online anymore. But it was a pretty memorable experience, you know, being part of that. I got to be the client.
You were there.
I was the client on the show who showed them around and sat down with them at the end for the reveal and all that.
Sure.
But they didn't let me, you know, the client didn't get to be there for the investigation. That's how they did the show, you know, which I disagreed with, but they had some interesting experiences. At the end of the show, when they did the reveal, Jason Hawes said to me, well, there are a lot of really intriguing personal experiences, but not enough for us to say it was haunted. And that, I thought, was really strange, because he offered no alternative explanations for all those weird things that happen. So if it's not haunted, what were all those things?
Yeah, good question.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to know.
You know, I often wonder, what does he use as a basis for solid evidence? What is it do they want for solid evidence?
I also wanted to know that, yeah.
Besides EVP and besides maybe something really striking in a photograph.
It seemed kind of inconsistent to me.
Well, truly.
Yeah.
You cannot discount other people's experiences, especially if it's coordinated with what other people have either heard or seen in the past or read about, and then finally someone experiences it. You've got to put it all together and incorporate it.
And you've had your own experiences there, too, have you not?
Yeah, I've had a few, but probably the strongest was hearing a voice in there where I was given a tour for two people at the top of the stairs, and in the middle of me talking, I heard, "Hello."
And Mr. Card.
I said, "Did you hear something?" The guy said, "Yeah, I heard a man say hello. His wife didn't hear a thing." We looked everywhere. There was nobody near the lighthouse.
That's strange that the wife didn't hear anything.
Yeah, yeah, she didn't hear a thing.
I know, it's weird how that happened.
Although my wife was there by herself one time, and she heard a male voice say something in her ear. She couldn't make it out, but she like turned around and said, "May I help you?" And she looked everywhere. There was nobody around. Another one of our volunteers heard a male voice in the top of the lighthouse say, "What are you doing?"
Wasn't he painting or something?
Yeah.
And he left.
Yeah. He decided to go pack up and go home. But there's been a lot of experiences there. So.
Well, that one you can go to, and there are some tours in the fall, too.
That's
at the Portsmouth Harbor Lighthouse.
Are you guys, you and Ron doing any
we've
tours?
That's over for the season as far as the nighttime tours.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
No more of those this year. But we still have a few more weeks of Sunday afternoon open houses through Columbus Day weekend, so a couple more weeks. On a Columbus Day, on Monday, October 8th, that's our last open house of the season, on that Monday, we'll have Santa Claus there and the only official lighthouse keeper in the United States, Sally Snowman from Boston Light. It's a benefit for Friends of Flying Santa, and we probably don't have time to explain that, but if people go to flyingsanta.org, it's related to lighthouses. Flying Santa goes back to 1929, flying over lighthouses, dropping presents for lighthouse keepers. So on Columbus Day, 1 to 5, we'll have Santa Claus and the only official lighthouse keeper in the U.S., Sally Snowman. People can get their picture taken with them at Portsmouth Harbor Lighthouse on that afternoon.
Right. Wonderful.
Okay, very good.
Christmas a little early.
Yeah, Christmas early.
Yeah.
And if unfortunately, we are just about out of time, but Jeremy, you want to go give your websites again?
Sure. Portsmouth Harbor Lighthouse, there's a website for Friends of Portsmouth Harbor Lighthouses. It's Portsmouth Harbor Lighthouse, singular.org, and all the events are on there. And some history and so forth. And my personal website is NewEnglandLighthouses.net. I also have NewEnglandLighthouseTours.com, but as I mentioned earlier, that part of what I do is kind of winding down. So I think that, and also there's a New England Lighthouses Facebook group that's really active. We have like 14,000 people in it.
Wow.
So people are on Facebook. If you do a search for New England, Friends of New England Lighthouses, people might want to join that as well.
Okay.
Terrific.
All right, Jeremy, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Again,
thanks so much
thank
for having
you.
Me.
It's always great to have you here. And with that, as I said, we are out of time. So that is Spirit Radio, The Paranormal Experience.
And everyone, have a good evening. Thank you for listening. You have been listening to Spirit Radio, The Paranormal Experience, with your hosts, Willie Hassel and Lynn Nickerson, on the Paranormal UK Radio Network.
In this one of many possible worlds, all for the best, or some bizarre test, it is what it is, and whatever, time is still the infinite jest. The arrow flies.